Hello, my name's Toby Haydoke, and if you blinked, you probably missed this man's contribution to Doctor Who. Not really.
Hello, I'm Ray Peacock. Although this there's going to be a thing with this, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
I'm Ray Peacock. I was in Blink.
You were
the one with the statues. I played Bunto, very important role. It was the owner of the DVD store, very, very important role. If only because it annoyed you. But I wasn't credited as Ray Peacock then, because Ray Peacock is my stage name, and I was credited under my real name, which is Ian Bolesworth. But that was my last acting job that was credited under my real name.
And that was the thing, and I think that's, there's all sorts of stories that unfold here.
Yeah,
is because one, we're talking about possibly the most famous episode of Doctor Who of all time.
That happened after it, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm speaking to possibly the smallest contributor to it.
No, I'd argue that. I wouldn't by any means say that I'm like Kerry or anything like that. But although I think I gave a lot. Do you know? I'll tell you something about Kerry later on as well. But also, there were smaller parts than mine in that. But I think I was last on the credits, is that right?
I know the desk sergeant was.
There we go.
Yeah.
I
don't even know his name.
Yeah, look at that idiot. Yeah. Desk sergeant. Didn't even have a name. I've got a name, mate. Bunto, mate. Which is an important historical Doctor Who name. I found out later.
Yes, indeed. You're an in-joke.
Something about Christopher Biggins as well, I was told.
Yeah. Banto's aim, who was on a big Finnish thing.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, let's not get to the fact that DVDs on your shop had an apostrophe that was erroneous. We won't
did
even
that
stop.
You?
Yeah, of course it did.
You know that I didn't stock that shop myself.
I still blame you.
You know that.
But let's sort of wind back because the
before you do that, I've got a question. I don't want to forget this because I'm selling all my possessions on eBay at the moment for reasons that we won't go into. But I want to beg to you, I'm a big collector of toys and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I sold my entire Star Wars collection of vintage Star Wars toys. I got £400. I was absolutely devastated. But anyway, I wanted rid of them. I wanted to offload my stuff, my baggage, basically. I've kept some nice things as well, but I wanted stuff gone. So next time I move, I wasn't moving so much stuff.
Sure.
But I was genuine. I don't know where I stand on this. I've got the bracelet that I wore in the episode as Bunto.
Yeah.
Which is my own. It's not cost you. It's my own bracelet. That's not it. Don't look at it now, because that's a different bracelet. Saw your little face light up, Rev. I've got that bracelet, and I don't know whether or not I should sell it or not.
No, I
honestly considered giving it to you. I did. I did consider that. But because at the moment, I'm trying to get as much money. I'm not skinning off him, but I was going, I want to get as much money as I can together. So I've got that, and I've also got rid of all my stuff. So I didn't know whether it was worth me whacking that on eBay.
It's a difficult one, that, because
it's a very popular character.
No, because there are, you know, because to actually own something that was in an episode of Doctor Who,
yeah,
is a good thing.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But then again, there is a Doctor Who actor who shall remain nameless, who went to a convention.
It's Roger Jones, isn't it?
No, we'll get on to him as well. Okay. The only reason I came down tonight, because I thought you'd bring him.
I'm
he was in two episodes.
No, I'm not so afraid. He's got his brain sucked out by Daleks.
And this is like a conversation that none of you are privy to. We'll explain at the end.
Yeah, this is like the film Memento. You won't understand any of this till it finishes. Because it's not, I'll tell you what it is, it's not cashing in on it. It's not going, hey, I could sell that. It's not that at all. But I understand how it could be perceived as that.
It's a difficult one,
which
isn't
is vaguely disrespectful, I understand. So maybe I should just donate it to the Doctor Museum if that still exists. Or is that one at Blackpool still there? Yeah. I used to love the old one at Blackpool, though. The one on the side that's the shoe shop now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if maybe it's changed again, but that one that had the TARDIS on the side.
Yeah.
I used to go down the steps. I used to love that when I was little. I remember one year I just went to Blackpool, it just wasn't there anymore.
Well, you've already been very kind, because you actually gave me your sides.
I did, from Blink as well.
Before it was broadcast.
And you didn't read them?
I didn't read them.
Good boy.
No.
I get it. I get it as a thing, because I have that with the Muppets. I'm a massive fan of the Muppets. I'm obsessed about the Muppets. Star Wars, I'm massively obsessed about Star Wars. I've sort of let it go a little bit now. I think, you know, with the Disney transition and all that sort of thing. And they can do what they want with it. I'm not saying they shouldn't have it or anything like that, but I think I'm over it. I think, you know, and I've still got some beautiful Star Wars memorabilia and stuff that I'll keep forever, and I'll still love the films forever. But I'm over the obsession part of it. Not so much with the Muppets. I'm still pretty obsessed with the Muppets, even though that's a similar thing. I've got Marvel that I love, Muppets that I love, and Star Wars that I love have all been bought by Disney. They've all gone. And I don't like them. I don't like the Disney Muppets. I don't like it. But I cling to Jim Henson's Muppets. So whenever I talk about the Muppets, it's Jim Henson's Muppets as far as I'm concerned. And people say, oh, who's your favourite character? And I will say Frank Oz as Fozzie. I'll always make sure that it's, you know, it's really important to me that. Not that it's not performed well, but it's kind of different, and I think there's a bit of soul gone from them.
So let's wind back. So they threw you forward for a part, and when you went for the part in Doctor Who,
yeah.
I mean, was that one of just many things you got put forward for?
No,
what's the process?
I don't get many castings, really. It's improving at the moment. I've been for a few at the moment, and I tend to get very close. I'm always down to the last two, always. I was down to the last two for Ben Elton's new sitcom, and it didn't work out. They went with somebody much older, which hasn't happened for ages, where they've gone, we want someone older. I'm like, are you joking me? All right, so BBC Two or BBC One, you want older. BBC Three, I'm too old. So it wasn't one of many, really. It was, but I try not to get overly excited about stuff, and I try not to get overly excited about castings, and I knew it was a small part. I think it was even smaller during the read-through. I remember the director, she said to me, it's a small part, we're almost embarrassed bringing you in for it, but it is, it is a scene with the Doctor, is what they told me. I was like, all right. I was like, that's pretty cool. And then it transpired that had been read as, he is on a video in a room behind you.
It's not even an episode with the Doctor.
I know, it's Doctor Light, isn't it? I know that now. So they were sort of selling it in that way, and I was like, you don't have to sell it, it's cool, it's, you know, it's, I'll come and read for it, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. And I sat down with that lady, and I can't remember her name, that's horrible, isn't it?
The director?
Yeah.
Hetty McDonald.
Hetty, she was lovely. And she told me later on she cast me for my hair. She liked my hair, and somebody else said she always casts people for their hair, she really likes hair. I was like, that's really lovely. But she was fantastic, and I do this sometimes in castings, but not deliberately, we just end up having a chat. You read the lines, like, yeah, I'll get out of the way, and we just have a little gossip and all that sort of thing. I'm not a bitch or anything like that, but, you know, we had a chat about stuff and about the way things were, and we just got on very well. And it was, so much show, so she's cast me in everything she's ever done since. I wasn't doing four castings that day. It was the only one that day. It was in a church in London. It was ultra top secret. It was upstairs in a room in a church. I couldn't tell anyone I was going to it. Couldn't tell anyone I got it. Like, nothing at all about it. And I didn't even read it. I didn't even read the app before. I think I got most of the app before it, and I didn't read it. I skipped to my line, and I read that. And then
you
I read
more than one
and
line.
Then I, not at the time. And then I read it again without my line, and went, "Don't need me in this." Which is always a test that you do. You go, "Well, are you going to be the first thing cut?" And then. And then the actual script came through, which I read in a hotel in Cardiff the night before filming. Read the whole thing, intending to read from the beginning to my part. That was my intention. I can still vividly remember it. Lay on my front on the bed, reading it, and I read up to my part and literally couldn't stop. I went right the way through the entire script, and I ran home and went, I think this is one of the best scripts I've ever read in my life. It's absolutely amazing. And not just because of the lines or the direction or anything like that, but the way Moffat writes, I wasn't going to do you a copy of that script, and I've not, still not done it.
No, that's right. No.
I want you to read it, and I think I wish, I don't know if it's been released, but it should be released, because it's not, it's a book, everything's written, it's not like she turns over here, she does this, she walks across the room, it's not, she looks across, what's that? What's it? Everything's there, thoughts are in it, and it's an incredible script. And, you know, so I was at that point pretty confident it was going to be what I thought was the same as all the other Doctor episodes. It's really well written, all that. I didn't know it was then going to end up being a standout episode. But yeah, it was ace, it was amazing. Do you want to ask me a question? I've talked for a long time.
Yeah, well, no, you did. No, it's all right, because we've talked about this, where you do, you have a bit where she comes in and says, and you do a very suspicious shush,
yeah.
And then look, which I'm sure isn't it?
Not in the script,
no. You're leading us away there.
Yeah, sorry.
Or overacting. One of the two.
Well, no, it occurred to me that I think my best acting is surly, is very relatively surly. And relatively apart from people, So please don't take this as me building up that role in any way, shape, or form. I'm thinking there was a lot more going on in that than you think. It wasn't. It was, there was part of it was building up my part, and part of it was like, because I didn't tell Kerry I was going to do it either, and the first two times I did it, she couldn't stop laughing. It was, she genuinely was falling apart laughing. And she'd go, I'm so sorry. And she's like, you can't do that. I'm doing it. I'm doing that. So you've got to deal with that. I'm doing it. And I think she's probably learnt a very important acting lesson from that. And I don't know what she's up to, but I think she's probably will do well.
And subsequently got nominated. Yes, it did. Yeah, well, it did.
My advice.
Because, you know, we are here talking about what is generally considered the best episode of Doctor Who ever.
Yeah.
All
done well out of it.
Which features an Oscar-nominated actress.
Yeah, I'm off the Halifax adverts.
And
the one that changed his name and went into Peacock and Gumball.
And you were going to be part of my show, of course.
That's right, yeah.
And you were very kind and donated. For those, my sequel to Moth Ate My Doctor Who Scarf had a whole thing about how I was jealous of my friend who was in Doctor Who is a Star Wars
fan.
That's right. And we had a whole thing with posters of you and posters of you and my kid, and I cut them just at the end of the thing. But it is a sort of banter thing that we have, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And that's nice, but I think that's safe because we know what's at its root.
Yeah, but let's wind right back, because the way that you got into Doctor Who is you were an established comedian, which is not an easy job to do.
No. It's not an easy job to be established in.
Sure. And you are, you know, I'm the reason I'm in Manchester tonight to see your gig is because I'm doing the warm-up for University Challenge tomorrow. And that's the only warm-up I do, whereas you are a very experienced warm-up man, which takes, I think, a lot of brass. So where did you develop the brass to do what you do?
I think going into it ignorant, I think, is the answer. I think it was because when I was thrown very limited opportunities, like my first warm-up was for Nigella. Nigella Lawson had a daytime joke on Nigella. And I didn't have a clue how to do it. No idea. And the only thing that got me through that was Terry Wogan. Or Sir Terry Wogan now, where he, not that I recognise titles, but yeah, there we go, who was wonderful. And he guided me through that day. He really looked after me. And he, I worked with him again recently. So he did a comic relief episode of Not Going Out. Children in Need of Not Going Out. And I do the one point Not Going Out. And he was there then. And just again, same wonderful man. I don't think he remembered me, but either way. I didn't do well at Nigella at all. But I didn't know what I was meant to do. I had no idea. All I knew was I had to keep their attention when they weren't filming, when they weren't having to be quiet. So, and I think comedy, I trained as an actor at Bretton Hall, so I didn't go to a major drama school, but I think some people now consider Bretton Hall to be a major drama school.
It was good enough for the League of Gentlemen.
Yeah, there was a few there, but it wasn't. Like, we'll just say that it wasn't. When I was there, it wasn't a major drama school. You know, it wasn't at all. You know, Manchester was, and obviously Central and places like that down in London. But I quickly decided I didn't want to do acting because I left drama school and went to London because you've got to do that, apparently. And I did two Chekhov plays simultaneously, two shorts. I did The Bear and The Proposal, both of which I love as plays and both parts that I love very much as well. However, about nine nights in, I think it was, I remember being on stage going, I don't want to say these words. I don't want to say that. I want to change this. I didn't, but it really stuck at me. I was like, I don't want to do acting. I'll do acting if opportunities arise for telly where you do it once, but I don't want to do acting in the theatre every single night. I've since come around on that. I would quite like to do it now. So I set up a comedy club in Finchley, at the Torrington Arms in Finchley, and compared it, despite having literally zero material, nothing, not a thing. I didn't prepare any material before it. I never wrote in the daytime and then did it. I literally got up there and just had to do it. And I did reasonably well some nights. I did very well other nights. And I did not well at all other nights at all. And I didn't even, in my head, think, I'm learning. I didn't even acknowledge that. It was just, I'm going to keep just trying to get up there and do it without any prep at all. And I wouldn't advise anyone to do it. Because it's an absolute... it's a recipe for disaster, really. But I did find that I was able to. I did find that some nights I was able to get away with it. Often with audience banter, which obviously is great for warm-ups. Yeah, you know, you do that all night. But there were some warm-up men like Ted Robbins, who did it for years and years and years, who were going to do gag after gag after gag after gag. People love that. Shove them on Jonathan Ross, they'll love it. I did Jonathan Ross for a little while. I wasn't right for the show. I said I wasn't. Same with Graham Norton. I said I wasn't right for it. They need a gag man. They need someone who'll do, you know, stuff, not mess about. But the shows that I did get attached to, like Not Going Out, Russell Howard's Good News, Miranda I did for a long time, you know, Red Dwarf I did last year. Those shows I was very suited to because of the sort of people that were in the audience, because of the sort of stuff I did, where you'd often get people on Twitter afterwards just going, the warm-up man was better than the show. It's like, well, no, it wasn't. But I did my job perfectly for that show. So I know which ones I'm right and which ones I'm wrong for.
And what we watched tonight was, again, there was nothing slick about the show.
No.
But it was terribly funny.
Yeah, but and that'll edit to very funny. You know, like, that will edit to I don't know, it's a weird thing. It's because we kind of, we play underdogs in the double acts in Peacock and Gamble. We are underdogs. And, I mean, it's like the Johnny Vegas syndrome, do you know what I mean? The worst thing that could happen to us is become popular, because if we did, we're knackered.
Yeah.
As with happening with Johnny, you know, it's not, he's knackered, he's not knackered, but it killed that character.
The act doesn't work in the same way.
Yeah, it killed the stand-up, totally. And he's found different ways of doing it, when, you know, when he does do it. But the character of Johnny Vegas was an absolute abject failure who couldn't possibly be a viable entertainer that he wanted to be. And I was a tip and a drunk and, you know, ruined gigs, etc., etc., etc. And then he got massively famous with the monkey adverts and the happiness series that he did with Paul Whitehouse. And then suddenly I went out doing that character and people were in the newspapers going, he turned up drunk. He was out of control. It's like, well, he's been doing that for years. All you said is monkey and he's been doing that for years. So you know what I mean? We're aware of that. So we do try and keep it as underdogs and as plucky amateurs, but it'd be easy to do that and it'd be rubbish. Actually be rubbish. So being rubbish but being funny is, you know, it's you don't want to ruin the magic by, you know, pulling back the curtain, but it's harder than it looks.
Would you take a penthouse flat in a jacuzzi then?
Would I take it?
Yeah.
If it was offered to me?
Yeah.
I'd take it, but I'd deny it. I'd deny that I had it. I'd say, oh, no, I'm house sitting.
Would you still do
it? Russell Howard.
Would you still do Excess Malarkey?
I would absolutely do it. Have I ever turned Excess Malarkey down?
You haven't?
Never. No, I never would. No, nor would I. Because not to blame it on Trump, because I'm actually criticised for this by some people close to me, both industry and personally, that my sense of fairness is often obstructed to my career. But I hate it. I hate unfairness and I hate brutality. In professional brutality, I think it's worse than football hooliganism. I honestly do. At least they just go and be animals for a day. Professional brutality is calculated and manipulative and malevolent, and I despise it. And it's rife in our business, in acting and in comedy. It's rife. It really is. And I've had people that I've considered close to me who've been absolutely brutal and cold, and sometimes at my expense. And I can't do it, and I can't make any peace with that at all. The things that have happened that are bad experiences in television for me, I took on the chin. I was very vocal about them, and the people that I felt let me down, I let them know that they'd let me down, and I let them know that that's caused a problem, and that's, you know, stuck in my craw, and that I feel mistreated. But again, my sense of fairness. See, I can also just go, I know why you've done that. I know you've done that for your career, and you didn't, you know, and you've done that so not to not rock the boat, etc., 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 etc. And that happens, and you just go, right, if you can sleep with that, sleep with it, fine. But we can't work together again, and it, you know, and you know, in the future, whatever. And you end up having fantasies going, well, one day when I pick my Oscar up, I will look in the camera. I won't even say their name, but they'll know I'm looking at them. There are good guys, Toby. That's my, you know, I think that's the bottom line to it. There are good guys. And they do exist and they do work in it. Unfortunately, weirdly, the good guys have to work harder. They have to work much harder because they have consciences and because they have, you know, they have that sense of fairness. So, unfortunately, I can't go cutthroat on this. I can't go cutthroat on my career. And that's not a lack of ambition in any way, shape or form. It's that I can't dissolve that part of who I am as a person. We know the ones who are going to be next as well. That's the other thing as well. On the circuit, we know who will be next. We know who's going through that process at the moment. And how cutthroat they can be. Not all of them, but some of them. And, you know, because people could argue Russ Howard's like that. And I can tell you firsthand from knowing Russ Howard that a nicer lad you couldn't wish to meet. You know, very, very grounded, very ambitious, absolutely ambitious, and he wouldn't, I don't think he'd ever deny that. But he's not showbiz parties and all that sort of thing. You know, he's not playing that game. He's not, you know, got his arm around a dolly bird or anything like that. He's very much committed to what he wants to do. He will do certain things within his career that maybe one day he'll look back and say, I wish I'd done that. Or maybe he'll look back and say that thing was important because it made that happen and blah, 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 blah. But he's one that's gone through and become very, very famous who hasn't, well, not to my knowledge, or certainly not to me, hasn't been rude or cutting or, you know, he's been nothing but supportive of me. I've been on his show, I do the warm-up on his show and all that, you know. It'd be easy for me to turn around when they ask me to do warm-up on Good News and go, we toured together 2 years ago and Edinburgh Beyond, what's going on? Why am I doing his warm-up? But I didn't, I swallowed it. I went, okay, I'll go and do it, and it's worked out pretty well. Yeah, it's worked out well. But there's certain people I've worked with before who I wouldn't go and do warm-up on their shows.
Well, I won't ask you who they are because that's not what this is about. And no. I've exceeded my time.
That's all right.
My goodness, I'm so sorry.
Made it all serious, haven't I?
No, but again,
I'm like Patton Oswalt.
That's what. Well, look, if we don't get the Pulitzer for this,
I know, mate.
But
this will be looked back as the moment comedy changed.
But
when Peacock just started talking and Haydock agreed with him.
But. Do you get... Right, so let's bring it right back to Doctor Who. We'll do a couple of minutes on Doctor Who.
Okay, go for it.
Do you get attention from people? Do people know that Ray Peacock is Ian Boldsworth?
Well, yes, to a degree, because we talked about it quite a lot on the podcast. I think some people didn't quite understand what the joke, which was that on the podcast I would often talk about being in Doctor Who. Oh, yeah, I was in Doctor Who, of course, and blah, blah, blah. Making it into a bigger deal than it... You know, if they went and watched it, they go, you're in it for like a minute, tops. You know, that's the joke of it. And somebody can say, why did you always mention Doctor Who? It's like, because that's funny.
Cause that's yes, yeah, indeed, yeah. Sure.
But sometimes people don't get that, and that's fine. That's probably my fault for not making it clear enough. After the episode aired, in fact, maybe before the episode aired, in fact, fan mail had started a little bit, because people had read it in Doctor Who magazine. I thought, your letter, that was lovely. And
you've just made me now sound like some. Yes, I know you, but I only talk to you if there's nobody else important in the room.
I got Raji to sign it as well for you. It started then the episode aired, was very, very popular. Then fan mail increased for a little while. People sent photos and things to sign and told me about their families. They did, really, really weird. Like, often things like saying, hello, my name's this. This is my daughter, photo of a daughter, of a young girl. She likes gardening, photo of her in the garden. She likes cooking as well, photo of her. She met Billy Piper recently, photo of her Billy Piper. You're like, oh, I've got an house full of pictures of children. This is really... We'll be there when they break in the door going, no, I was in Doctor Who. What were you in Doctor Who? Not that Ray Peacock. No, he's under my real name. But yeah, so that was all. That was fair enough. And you sign it, you send it back and all the rest of it. But I wouldn't say I now get any recognition from Doctor at all, other than people that are fans of me and what me and Ed do, and Peacock and Gamble, who have found out from that I was in Doctor Who. So they were, you know, they were fans at the offset. The only exception to that happened in Edinburgh last year, 2012, when me and Ed were doing a show at the Fringe, doing it really, really well. But there's one gentleman who almost certainly be listening to this. There was one gentleman, and he was quite a portly gentleman, with a big beard and that. I remember him bald, but maybe he wasn't. We said he looked like Santa, that classic, you know, that comedy thing that you do. But he was stony-faced throughout the entire thing. Stony-faced, didn't like it at all. Apart from, there's a bit in our show where I've got a little tiny can of Pepsi Max, and I keep picking it up and going, what? Look at that. Hello, little Pepsi Max. Little Pepsi Max. Hello. Right, a really stupid bit that grows and grows as it goes on. And he screamed, like, he proper was moved, like, proper laughing at that. Back to the show, stop laughing again. We were like, this is so weird. Like, on stage, we were like, bloke. Until eventually, I just kept, just when it wasn't doing well, picking up the can of Pepsi Max and putting it in front of him. And just started laughing again. It was incredible. And then afterwards, we met, he waited for us outside. And his wife went, oh, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I went, yeah, he didn't, did he? And she went, oh, no, that's what he's like. The fact that he laughed at all, he didn't say a word. And she went, only came because he saw your picture in the brochure and he knew you're off Doctor Who. And I was like, that is really weird. Because the name I was a Doctor Who wasn't in the brochure.
Sure.
First of all, my look isn't particularly... lots of people could look like me.
Indeed.
In a poster. In a little poster. And it could be any number of people. So to go, that is definitely that bloke from Doctor Who. My hair's shorter than it was, and it's still pretty long, but it's shorter than it was in Doctor Who. So the fact that he nailed it, that is definitely the bloke from Doctor Who. Came to it, didn't really enjoy it, apart from a little can of Pepsi Max, but then afterwards claimed to love it, and that was the only reason he came to the show.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is really weird. That's really weird. Even allowing for obsession, that's really weird.
No, I've said...
You would take a punt on a Fringe show because that bloke could possibly be the bloke from Doctor Who.
I've sat through 4-hour productions of Antony and Cleopatra.
But you knew
because Mardian might have been in the Space Pirates.
But you knew, but you knew they'd been in Doctor Who. You knew that they were involved with Doctor Who. He didn't know for definite. Even if he'd gone, I think that's that bloke, I'm going to Google his name. Ray Peacock. It's not him. Right? Even though it is. It's not him.
Well,
not
now him. They're going to know that it is.
No, he knows now. Totally. I thought I'd be fine to talk with him as a recall.
Well, look, bless you, because you work tonight, so I've got the two questions.
Really
the first one is, what's the charity that you would like the listeners to donate to?
Can I pick two?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to go to quid, split it 50p each way. I'm going to go Macmillan.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely Macmillan, because I think they're absolutely wonderful, and I've had first-hand experience of them, unfortunately. I hope that the listener never does. But if you do...
I love the fact that it's the listener.
No, that's how you do it. Have I got to teach you radio?
No, I'm lightening the cancer.
Yeah, it's gone anyway. Macmillan, definitely. And also, there's a charity called Joining Jack, which is supported very much by the rugby league community, and further afield as well, because it's a former rugby league player whose son is very, very poorly, and there's a charity called Joining Jack, which I would advise everyone to support. Because for me, that charity, even beyond anything else about the lad being poorly and all the rest of it and the research that they're doing, has proven to me beyond any doubt whatsoever that rugby league is the best sport in the world, because it has a genuine family and all rivalries are put aside and everything's put aside. When something bad happens in rugby league, which sometimes happens, players have died and all that sort of thing, when that happens, it comes together as clubs going to debt, all that. Rival clubs, it comes together as a massive family, and I think Joining Jack is very representative of that, and so I'll say Joining Jack.
And anyone that listened to that now, listening to this podcast, anyone that listened to that and went, oh gosh, that sounds a bit evangelical, but a thing that was a bit close-knit, because you know, you're listening to this because you watch a programme where a child dresses as a bear with big teeth, or a portly actor trips over a thing and you go, but I kind of like that. Yeah. It's sort of what we do. And I descended from a friend of mine who was doing a gig and has worked hard all night and still gave me a bit of time at the end of the night to talk about his, frankly, negligible contribution to Doctor Who.
Mate, I'll give you that. It is, absolutely.
But it's still better than
my... I'm in the encyclopedia.
Still jealous. He's a good friend and he rips me about it. So I will say to you, Ian Boldsworth or Ray Peacock, thank you for talking to me about Doctor Who.
Toby, I will speak to you till any time, all the time. But one day let's not speak about Doctor Who.
And actually, proper podcasts, though, as well, because you are the podcasting meister. Where's the Peacock and Gamble podcast? Which is, I mean, it's genuine. It's very, very funny.
Yeah, but it can be naughty as well, so bear that in mind. Yeah, say all them naughty words. Do you know what? I say naughty words. It's more the ethos. It's on iTunes, I guess. Chortle hosted the comedy website, but it's on iTunes. I think all the episodes are still there. We don't do it very regularly now, but when we do it, it's... as negligible as my contribution to Doctor Who.
And we'll look forward to your Radio 4 show.
Yes,
great. And best of luck with that.
Cheers, Toby. Thank you.
And you can see Ian as Ray Peacock in comedy clubs up and down the country. He's a lovely man and an excellent comedian. Now, his charity is Joining Jack, which is joiningjack.org. Please give if you can, then out of the great evil that is this podcast must come something good. Next up, I interview a lovely couple, both of whom were in the same Doctor Who story. And I say that with the caveat is that a few of my coming nexts haven't actually come next. That's because I'm sort of doing this on the fly. I have to edit when I can, and sometimes some files are available to me and some others aren't, and it's all very boring. But the ones that I've said are coming next at some point, but they just might not come next. I do what I can. Bear with me. This is how I roll. Keep listening in whatever order I deign to bestow my gifts upon you. Goodbye.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The Companion Chronicles, Starborn.
Vicky! Stop!
Madam Violet? What is it?
Oh, Vicky, don't go in the TARDIS. Don't.
Well, I can't, can I? They've shut the doors on me.
It'll take you to your doom.
Don't be silly.
Come with me. Talk to someone who can explain it to you.
Someone?
Someone dead, of course. Come on.
Spirits, I am here. I am open to you. Approach and speak.
Hey! Oh, what was that?
Oh, that, my dear, was a sign, although whoever made it has no doubt been frightened away now. Pick up your chair, we'll have to try again.
But there has to be an explanation.
There is. The spirits are real.
I meant an explanation that makes sense. Hello? There's no one there. Hello? Who's that?
It's me. You. Vicky.
You die very soon.
A few days from now.
A few days from now, but...
in the far distant past.
You're making this up. I'm leaving.
No. If you leave this time and place, then your death will be inevitable.
Big Finish. We love stories.